By downloading or listening to this podcast, you are agreeing to Moody's legal terms and conditions found at moodys.com/disclaimer, including that the information provided is not investment or financial advice, and that Moody's will not be liable for losses arising from your use of the information.
I'm Danielle Reed, and this is Moody's Talks, Focus on Finance. Nearly 3 weeks after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, there's continued devastation in that country, tragic loss of life, and the displacement of millions of Ukrainians. Understandably, business as usual has ground to a halt for all kinds of companies, including financial firms. In today's episode, my co-host Miles Nelligan is joining to speak to banking team analyst Yaroslav Sovgira about what the military conflict means for Russian and Ukrainian banks, and in particular, how sanctions imposed by the US and Western European governments and their allies have affected Russian banks. Miles, thank you for joining.
Thanks for having me, Danielle.
So, Miles, the future right now for banks in both countries seems at high risk from a credit perspective. Is that a fair summary of what Yaroslav has to say?
Yes, that is a fair summary. And in fact, it's reflected in our very sharp downgrade of the ratings of a number of financial institutions in the region. Yaroslav will be talking us through the reasons for those rating actions, which include downgrades of both the Russian and Ukrainian sovereigns, as well as sanctions-related economic turmoil in Russia, and of course, the direct effects of the conflict in Ukraine.
Miles, thank you. We'll hear more about banks in both countries in a few minutes. But first, I'm joined by banking team analysts Olivier Panis and Melina Scuridou, who will talk about how the military conflict in Ukraine is affecting global banks and Western European banks, respectively. Olivier, let's start with the broader impact. What are the biggest risks for global banks from the military conflict?
Thanks, Daniel. When considering direct risk to banks, we have identified moderate risks for a few foreign banks, mostly European lenders with subsidiary in Ukraine and Russia. Melina will provide more details on those specific examples. However, mitigating aspect for global banks in this crisis is that most of them have proactively decreased their overall exposure to the Russian economy in response to Russian invasion and subsequent annexation of Crimea in 2014. Overall, the claims of foreign lenders on Russian borrowers fell to around $121 billion at the end of September 21, from a peak of around $275 billion in the first quarter of 2013.
I see. So direct exposure has really fallen quite sharply in the past 7 years or so. What about indirect fallout from the invasion?
Daniel, I think those indirect risks can be much more material for global banks. First, those indirect risks for banks will emerge from the reliance of their corporate borrowers on imports or exports from Russia and Ukraine, supply chain disruption of raw materials and commodities, potential inability to settle international trade transactions in foreign currency, sectoral sanctions, exclusion from SWIFT, and a Russian ban on foreign exchange loans and bank transfers will hurt the finances of corporates with large exposures to the Russian market. We expect corporate banks in economies that rely the most on trade flows with Russia to be hit hardest.
And which countries' economies have big exposures to trade flows with Russia?
Well, when considering volumes, China, Germany, and the Netherlands had the largest trade volumes to Russia in 2020, but this represented a very modest proportion of their total domestic economic output, around 1% or less. In contrast, economies where trade flows are more dependent to Russia and Ukraine will expose banks to higher asset risks. Those come mainly from former members of the Soviet Union. Import and exports to Russia, for example, represented nearly half of the Belarus GDP. We expect that banks in those countries will face more pronounced pressures from a weakening macroeconomic environment.
Okay, and speaking of macroeconomics, what are the global macroeconomic effects from the military conflict?
Well, a prolonged conflict in Ukraine would likely damage global economic growth and investor and consumer confidence, the key drivers of global banking activity. Weaker than expected economic growth, slowing global trade flows, and higher inflation would hurt banks' business opportunities. Inflation risks stemming from disruption in Ukraine and Russian commodity exports affect global energy prices and can slow or halt production in industries relying on minerals or metals from Russia and Ukraine. Those risks will add to supply chain imbalances and labor shortages global economies have already faced over the past 12 months.
Can you tell me just a little bit more about inflation? Because that seems to be on everyone's minds right now.
Yes, the Ukraine invasion will delay the gradual decline in inflationary pressures that we were anticipating for 2022 before the conflict began. In February, annual inflation was 5.8% in the euro area. In the US, it rose also to 7.5%, the highest since February 1982. A pronounced rise in inflation would likely weaken banks' loan quality and undermine their profitability through wage and cost inflation. But we do not expect it will materially increase funding costs for banks in the short run, since they started the year flush with low-cost deposits and abundant liquidity. With the global repercussions from the military conflict still at an early stage and the economic outlook uncertain, central banks will likely take a prudent approach on monetary policies. We've seen last week the ECB taking first decisions to reduce gradually their debt purchase program. However, accelerated and earlier than expected policy shifts will benefit banks' margins.
Right, I see. And lastly, there's kind of an elephant in the room in terms of cyber risk, although so far we haven't seen too much in the way of large-scale cyber attacks.
You are correct, Danielle. We expect that risk of cyber attacks on banks will rise as geopolitical tension heighten. Given their strategic importance to economies, banks with less robust cybersecurity will be more exposed to severe credit implications of successful attacks. Another long-term risk that banks need to take very seriously right now is compliance and legal risk as sanctions multiply from various jurisdictions with very often uncertainties on their precise scope and perimeter and almost daily updates and additions. This creates a risk of breaching those sanctions if adequate processes and controls are not in place.
Olivier, thank you for that overview. And Melina, you've published research on the effects of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on Western European banks. What should listeners know about the impacts there?
Yes, thank you, Daniel. Well, most large European banks have little direct exposure to Russia or Ukraine. And this is because of sanctions, political tensions, and fears over money laundering have pushed banks in Europe to reduce their exposure to Russia in recent years. For example, banks in the Nordics and the Baltics that traditionally operated branches in Russia have closed them over the past decade and have wound down their cross-border business. Nordea Bank was the last to close its Russian bank at the end of 2020, leaving current exposures of Nordic and Baltic banks to Russia below 1% of their total assets.
But as Olivier mentioned, there are a smaller number of Western European banks that do have some exposure.
Yes, that's right. A few large rated banks in Europe, mainly Austria's Raiffeisen Bank International, Hungary's OTP Bank, have subsidiaries in both Ukraine and Russia. France's Société Générale and Italy's UniCredit are also exposed through their subsidiaries in Russia. These parent banks will be faced with weakening asset quality and rising loan loss provisioning needs, reducing their profitability of the subsidiaries. And the drop will be exacerbated by the lower exchange rates that the banks will use to convert the net profit into the group's domestic currencies. There is also a real possibility, we think, that given the restrictions on capital flows, together with political and other stakeholder pressure, that these banks will have to write down their investments in the region entirely.
Okay, let's talk about these banks for a second, these few banks for a second. What are the main sources of disruption and credit risk to them, starting with the subsidiary banks in Ukraine?
Sure. I mean, in Ukraine, there is massive displaced population. a near halt of economic activities in more stressed cities especially, and significant destruction to property which banks use as collateral against the loans they give out. The banks may also be hit by the weaker credit profile of the Ukrainian government. Although technically in Ukraine, the banks are not faced with a depreciating currency yet. This is because of the central bank's decision to suspend the operations of Ukraine's foreign exchange market, that is, except for foreign exchange sales by customers. The central bank also officially fixed the exchange rate to the rate prevailing as of the 24th of February. However, we expect that the currency will weaken once the foreign exchange operations resume, and the banks will also be faced with this.
Melina, thank you for that really helpful background. And we're now joined by my co-host, Miles Nelligan, who will talk to banking team analyst Yaroslav Sovgira about the credit risks facing a number of Russian and Ukrainian banks and some recent rating actions that have resulted from the sharp and sudden negative turn in their operating environment.
Thanks, Danielle. And Yaroslav, thanks to you for joining.
Hi, Miles, and thank you for having me.
So, Yaroslav, we've just heard from Melina and Olivier how Russia's invasion of Ukraine is affecting even banks that don't operate in the region. Unsurprisingly, Moody's recent rating actions indicate that for banks that do operate in Russia or Ukraine, the picture is much worse. Could you perhaps talk us through what we've done on that front?
Yes, Miles, sure. Last week, on 10th of March, we downgraded ratings of 39 Russian financial institutions to CA and ratings of 7 Ukrainian banks to CAA2, which is near our lowest rating level. The outlook on Russian financial institutions is now negative, while ratings of Ukrainian banks remain on review for further downgrade. Both of these rating actions are closely linked to our previous rating actions on Russian and Ukrainian sovereigns, which were downgraded to CA in case of Russia and CAA2 in case of Ukraine.
And aside from deteriorating sovereign credit quality, what other factors prompted the Russian downgrades?
Well, actually, the scope and severity of the sanctions announced to date exceed Moody's expectations and will have material credit implications. Russian financial institutions have been affected in a number of ways. To start with, there have been restrictions on cross-border payments due to capital controls introduced by the Central Bank of Russia. Then several largest Russian banks have been cut from the SWIFT payment system, and more banks may be cut in the next few weeks, meaning that it will be near impossible for them to conduct international transactions. Also, foreign currency conversions have been severely limited in the country, and international payment systems such as Visa and MasterCard stopped working in Russia. Furthermore, due to announced exit of many Western companies from Russia, as well as ban on export of many materials, technologies, and equipment, we now expect significant slowdown in business activity in the country. Sharp rise in unemployment and deterioration in credit quality for many Russian borrowers.
Okay. And again, leaving sovereign issues aside, I guess the main reason for the Ukrainian bank downgrades was their direct exposure to the conflict, as we heard a few moments ago from Melina.
Yes, indeed. The rating action reflects the direct credit implications of Russia's military invasion. Exactly as you say, economic disruptions in those areas of Ukraine affected by the military actions, loss of critical infrastructure, and destruction of property. And we think that if this military conflict protracts further, it will have a significant negative impact on economic conditions in Ukraine, disrupt the bank's operating environment, and lead to further weakening of liquidity in the banking system. And yes, we do expect borrower defaults to significantly increase for Ukrainian banks. A mitigating factor so far is economic and financial aid announced by Western countries in the recent days, which should prop up Ukraine's international foreign currency reserves and will go towards rebuilding the infrastructure after the war is over.
And Yaroslav, what are the chances of Russian banks finding ways to insulate themselves from the sanctions?
Well, while Russian authorities and banks have improved their ability to operate under sanctions in recent years, the announced sanctions were so severe and coordinated that finding some workarounds may be difficult. And while domestic operations of Russian banks can be supported in various ways by the central bank, say, provision of funding, introduction of various forbearance measures, the effect of sanctions on cross-border operations may be quite difficult to circumvent. And furthermore, sanctions against the Central Bank of Russia will hamper the use of foreign currency reserves to support the ruble and financial system in case of need.
We're actually starting to see new kind of sanctions in terms of bans on imports of energy, oil or natural gas from certain countries. U.S. President Joe Biden, for instance, made an announcement on March 8th that the U.S. would ban imports of oil and natural gas from Russia, for example. Could this have any further implications for banks in Russia if they have energy companies as borrowers, for example?
You know, energy companies have been some of the strongest credits in Russian banks' portfolios. And while we expect these companies to be affected by the recently announced U.S. sanctions, which ban import on energy, we do not expect material worsening in credit quality of these borrowers, say in the short to medium term. Or at least we do not expect this particular industry segment to be worse off compared to other borrowers of Russian banks.
I see. Yaroslav and Miles, Melina and Olivier, thank you all very much for your insights. If you're listening to this show on a streaming service, please remember to follow or subscribe. And if you'd like to read any of the reports referenced in this podcast, you can find those by clicking the link to this episode at about.moodys.io/podcasts. And please join us again on Wednesday, March 23rd for the next episode of Focus on Finance.